I was hoping that young people would study along with us on this subject of the eldership. Rex Kiker spoke and urged that we must be raising up elders from the age of 10 on, that we need to be developing our children, our young men, into elders. This is the crying need of the church today, and I pray that God will grant us these men and raise them up because of the tremendous task that lies ahead of us. May God bless us while we continue our study tonight. This morning, we noticed a personal requirement or a list of personal requirements that are to be qualifications possessed by men who serve as elders or shepherds. And we observed that it's possible for a man to possess these qualities and yet not possess the desire to do the work. And then we gave a general work outline, a description of the work. And we learned from studying from 1 Peter and from Hebrews 13 and from the passage back in Ezekiel 34 that the work of a bishop or the work of a shepherd is to be out among the sheep. It's to bind up and to feed and to hunt for and to look for stragglers and to shield and protect and to engage in all of this work that's out among the sheep. This was the conclusion that we arrived at this morning. And so tonight I want us to continue to look at this subject, and I want us to ask the question, what can a sheep really expect from a true shepherd? Next Sunday morning we're going to look at the subject, what can a shepherd expect from a true sheep? That ought to be interesting. Tonight, though, we want to direct our attention to the subject, what can a sheep expect from a true shepherd? And may I say first and foremost that a sheep has the right to expect from a true shepherd a true shepherd's heart. Without a true shepherd's heart, a person cannot be a true shepherd. We'll have to be able to look to Jesus for this heart. And a true shepherd ought to possess the same kind of heart that Jesus possessed. Jesus is the only example that we have of a perfect shepherd. And consequently, we'll need to go to him, and we're going to do this tonight in a few moments as we turn to John the 10th chapter. We need to be able to go to Jesus for an example of what a real shepherd is. Jesus fulfills the longing of the sheep for care. And he also serves as a concrete example and an answer to the question, what is a shepherd anyway? There have been so many misconceptions. There have been so many occasions when we've just turned our heads and we've not really considered what the work of a real shepherd is. Simon Peter, some 30 years after Jesus had walked with those men and had then left them and left upon their shoulders the work of shepherding, Simon refers to Jesus as the chief shepherd, and he gave the promise of a reward to those men who serve as real shepherds. He says that God, or rather that Christ, when the chief shepherd, Christ, returns, he'll bring with him a crown that he will grant to those who are shepherds, an everlasting or an unfading crown that he'll give to those who are shepherds. So I think that the first thing that we could say that a sheep has the right to expect from a shepherd is that he has the right to expect a shepherd's heart. Now the first evidence of this gift of the shepherd's heart, or the first evidence that you could expect to see in a man's life who is aspiring to serve as a shepherd, the first evidence of it is that capacity for compassion. The capacity of compassion, a heart that is filled with healing love, a heart that is filled with self-sacrificial grace and mercy. That is what is characteristic of a shepherd's heart. An elder who lacks this kind of heart, who lacks the kind of heart that can bleed with the problems and the needs of other people, that man will not do the work of the shepherd in the long run. In fact, he cannot do the work of the shepherd. It isn't in the man to do the work of a shepherd. It's not his gift. And there are people who do not have the gift of shepherd. They don't have the gift of the compassionate heart to the extent that they want to be involved in the lives of other people. So that man who lacks a genuine love for people will not, indeed he cannot, be a shepherd of God's church. I want you to look with me, if you will. Turn to Matthew, the 9th chapter, verses 35 through 38. I want to show you some passages tonight and study them with you. Matthew 9, 35 through 38 says, "And Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, and preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every disease and every infirmity. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, 'The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Pray therefore the Lord of harvest to send out laborers into his harvest.'" We, more often than not, associate that appeal or that plea that Christ made, "Pray the Lord of harvest, send forth laborers into his harvest." We have almost exclusively identified that as being that of evangelists. Pray that God will send out evangelists into the harvest. Brethren, that's not the context here. The context is it is the context of the shepherd and his sheep, someone to care for, someone to take care of these helpless, hapless, homeless human beings that make up God's pasture, his pasture land. These are the people that he says, "Pray that God will send forth these shepherds in among his people." Now, obviously, it involves evangelists. In fact, the heart of an evangelist is the heart of a shepherd. And in fact, an evangelist has to perform the work of a shepherd until shepherds are appointed. The Apostle Paul is an excellent example of how an evangelist had the heart of a shepherd. Read 1 Thessalonians. Read Acts, the 20th chapter. It'll break your heart as you see this man's heart just yearn for people, as he describes how that he treated them like a nurse treats her own children. He describes himself as treating them like a father treats his own children and nurtures them and admonishes them and encourages them to live a life of righteousness. And you find him saying that we gave not only we gave ourselves included. We didn't just preach to you, he says. We gave our whole hearts to you also. And you find Paul just throbbing and vibrating with the same kind of heart that Jesus had. And when he wrote of Timothy to the Philippians, he said, "I don't have any other man like Timothy who will truly care for your estate." He said, they all, the rest of them, truly they care simply for their own affairs and not the affairs of Christ. But he had himself, Paul was a man who throbbed with this shepherd's heart. Timothy was a man that throbbed with the shepherd's heart. And then Timothy was told by Paul, "You search out men, faithful men, and commit these things to them so that they can then in turn commit them to other people." They were, in effect, doing what Jesus was praying for here. The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Send or pray that the Lord of the harvest will send out laborers into the harvest. But Jesus talks about, as it's described here, about his conduct and his life among these people. He was out healing. He was out teaching. And it says that when he saw the people, he was moved with compassion for them. Now, the word compassion here can literally be translated that he was moved with pity in the very inmost bowels of his body. The Greeks thought that the compassion and the emotions had their origin in the bowels. And you know why? Because whenever you feel a real strong emotion, it always has its effect here in the stomach, in the bowel area. And the Greeks, not being all that up on where emotions originate, they thought that the seat of the emotions was in the bowel area. And so the word is actually for bowels, the innermost inworkings or innermost workings of the body. So Jesus says when he saw these people, he was moved with pity in the very inmost bowels of his body. Well, what was it that called forth this expression of compassion? It was the condition of the sheep. The Bible here says that they were harassed. They were helpless. Matthew, the 9th chapter, and verse 36. But again in Jeremiah 23, it says they were fearful, they were dismayed, they were missing, and they were scattered. All of these expressions give us some kind of an idea about the frantic nature of sheep who don't have a shepherd. They are harassed, they are helpless, they are fearful, they are dismayed, they are missing, and they are scattered. Jesus, when he saw this, was moved with compassion for those people. You know, and this morning I mentioned at one of the services, we need to clear up the misunderstanding that there exists about sheep. Sheep aren't nice. They don't come to you on a little pillow with a little ribbon around their neck, perfumed and powdered and all gentle and kind. That's not the way sheep are. Sheep are dirty. They stink. They're obnoxious. They're ignorant. They're hard to lead. They are the most senseless creature that God ever made. Sheep are. You can herd almost anything but sheep. They have to be cared for with the utmost care. A cattle or a cow, some type of cattle, they can more or less take care of themselves. They've got some sense. A mule has a lot of sense, but not a sheep. And so it is with Christian people. I don't know of a group of descriptives that describe the church more accurately than these descriptions that Jesus used here. They were harassed, they were helpless, they were fearful, they were dismayed, they were missing, they were scattered. Today's church is characterized by these very qualities. And we notice that the cure for it is to provide us with shepherds. This was what Jesus was longing to do. He says he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And so we need to clear up our misunderstandings about members of the church. They don't come to you nice on a pillow. They come out of the world. They smell. They're hard-headed. They're obstinate. They're ignorant. They're helpless. They're hapless. Many of them, it seems, are hopeless. All of this, you see, describes just people. Oh, we hide it. We're masters at hiding it and putting on a facade. You look at a man and his wife and you think, boy, they must have a beautiful marriage. And you don't know that at that very moment, they're just in the very throes of a divorce. You can't tell it many times by looking at them. Or you look at a man and his wife and their children, and you think, what a wonderful family they have. And you don't realize it right then, but the children are on drugs. The mother is just completely at her wit's end because of an irresponsible father. Or the father is at his wit's end because of the irresponsible mother. And the children are at their wit's end because they see no subjection of their mother to their father. They see no subjection of their father to God. And they see a complete disruption of the marriage relationship and of the home relationship, and the whole thing's about to fly in your face, but you can't tell it by looking at them. Sheep aren't that able to put up a facade. They just stink and smell and all that, and you see it, and they run and they scare, and but they're a lot alike. And Jesus compares us here to sheep. He says we're like sheep without a shepherd. Any man that does not want to get involved with the messy, sticky unpleasantries of the lives of human beings dare not offer his services as a shepherd of the flock, of the shepherd of the church. He dare not. I'll tell you one thing. You'll get in hip deep. You'll get in up to your eyeballs in the most absolute, raunchy, discouraging, complete mind-boggling, confused, complicated, no end in sight problems. If you want to blow your mind, spend day after day after day counseling with people about their problems. And if a man doesn't love people enough to do that, don't be an elder. Do not be a shepherd. If you're tempted to just simply shut yourself up in a room and stay away from it, then welcome to the clan. So are the rest of us. But if you love people, you'll dare to venture, to go on out and take the initiative and say, what's troubling you? Can I help you? And then, as often as not, the people will say, oh yes, please sit down. I've got to talk to somebody. And then here it comes. Well, what then can a sheep expect from a shepherd who has this shepherd's heart? Turn to John, the 10th chapter, and let's look. The one who has the shepherd's heart, a true shepherd, will provide several things for a sheep. First of all, though, I'd like to mention and notice with you that there are four types of individuals mentioned in John the 10th chapter that are all, at least possibly, connected with the sheepfold. There is the stranger. That's in verse 5. But they won't hear the voice of a stranger. They'll run from him. It's amusing to me that one of our elders the other day was in one of the meetings was complaining that he said, the people that I call that I know, and I know he wasn't thinking about this passage, but it was, he verified it to the degree, to the very nth degree. He said, I'm having a bit of difficulty. The people that I know and that know me, he said, I can call them up and I can arrange for a time and just go by and sit with them and talk. And there's no problem. But he says, these that I call up that don't know me, he said, you ought to hear the excuses they give why they can't get together with me. They've got to do this. They've got to do... And I thought, isn't that absolutely what he's talking about here when he talks about the stranger? They're not going to follow a stranger. And if the elders are strangers to the people, or the people are strangers to the elders, there's not going to be much real, genuine communion. So he mentions strangers. He mentions next thieves in verse 8. They come in to just simply rob and destroy and kill. And then he mentions the hireling. They're not there to kill, but they just ignore. They couldn't care less about the problems. And when the thieves and the robbers and the predators come, the hireling, he says, splits. He goes on off because he really doesn't have the good of the sheep at heart. And then he mentions the good shepherd. And we'll talk about just the good shepherd. But there was the stranger, the thief, the hireling, as well as the good shepherd. But what can a sheep expect of a true shepherd? Number one, he can expect security. Security. I don't know whether you're aware of how important security is to you or not. You know, you can't sleep unless you feel some degree of security. You can't eat unless you feel some degree of security. If you eat, you can't digest it unless you feel some degree of security. Well, look how this is expressed, in what terms this security is expressed. It talks about security through a deep personal relationship with the shepherd. Verse 3 makes this statement. Look at verses 1, 2, and 3. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs up by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. Listen to this, and so beautiful. To him the gatekeeper opens. Listen, the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. Now, verse 3 simply refers to this very beautiful, intimate relationship between the shepherd and his sheep. He knows his own sheep. He calls them by name. The sheep hear his voice. Security. Whenever you've been walking through some place and somebody, and it's dark, and you know, you're scared to death. Have you ever been down through a place where you're just scared to death, and all of a sudden somebody calls out? At first it startles you, but then the fact that they call you by name, John, you say, yes, who is it? And then they start talking, and they say, oh, you say, oh, it's you. You scared me there for a minute. But if you can hear your own name called, and if you recognize the voice of the one that's talking, and if you know that person, then everything's all right. Now, that's one of the main things that a shepherd provides for his sheep. He provides security. Look at verse 14. I am the good shepherd. I know my own. And there's something else involved. He says, my own know me. I know my own. And my own know me. I think a sheep has the right to expect of a shepherd, a true shepherd. I think he has the right to be called by his first or by his name. You say, well, that rules you out, doesn't it? Well, not really. I can get around a certain number of people. When you have 3,000, it's difficult. I used to worry about it, but I realized I have limitations and I just can't go beyond it. But I do have the capacity to be able to associate with people on an intimate, personal basis. But he says he calls his sheep by name. They know his voice. Everybody has a voice. Brother Richie, he can tell your voice. You don't have to tell your name. He knows it by your voice. Because without eyesight, he's had to learn people through just the way they speak. And then finally it says, I know my own and my own know me. How well should a shepherd be known to his sheep? Oh, well enough that they'll gain confidence and security through the experience of his life. If they know, oh, I know, he's been through this same thing. So they have this security. They have the security through personal identification. They have the security that comes by knowing the voice, this familiar voice of this person. And then they have the security that goes through experience. They know everything's going to be all right. And when the shepherd then tells them and gives them this advice, and he says to them, "This is my advice, that you do thus and thus," the sheep then says, "Well, you know, I'll accept that because I know you. And I know that you've given good advice in the past. And I know that you know what you're talking about." This is all so important in the raising of sheep. It's all so important in the raising of people and in the bringing them to the maturity that they need to be brought to in their Christian life. So, first of all, a sheep has the right to expect security from the shepherd through a deep personal involvement and relationship with the shepherd. But a second thing, a sheep has the right to expect an example from the shepherd. In the verse 4 of this 10th chapter, it says, "When he has brought all of his own out, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice." But the point I want you to notice here is that it says he goes before them. Simon Peter says you must not be domineering, but you must set yourself an example for the flock. That's what he's talking about here. The good shepherd asks the sheep to do nothing but what he himself is doing, and except what he himself can be seen to be doing. Paul told the people to whom he wrote, he said, "Follow me as I follow Christ. Imitate me." And he just simply said it without any shame. He said, "You imitate me." And he gave his life for that very reason. He said, "I want you to have an example." On one occasion, he says, "I have worked with my hands night and day that you might not be burdened, so that I might give you an example how each of you ought to work with your own hands, to mind your own business, and have some money to do good to other people." He says, "I've given you this example." That's what Christ is saying here. The sheep has the right to expect of his shepherd the very things that the shepherd is asking of the sheep. But a third thing that a sheep has the right to expect, he has the right to expect feeding. In verse 9, listen to what it says, "I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture." You know, this isn't unusual. And you'd be surprised if this was not connected with the description of the shepherd here. The shepherd feeds the sheep. And in the New Testament, as well as in the Old Testament, the total biblical description of a pastor shepherd always gives the clear picture that oversight is always linked with feeding. Always linked with feeding. The three words, shepherd, feed, and rule, are all closely interrelated. In fact, they are essentially the same word. One is poimen, the shepherd, pastor, or poimeno, then the verb, to tend like a shepherd, to rule, and then the infinitive that's found in Acts 20-28, poimenein is the infinitive, which means to feed. All of these are related to one another. To shepherd, to tend, to rule, to feed. They're all essentially certain forms of the same word. And I'm wondering, I tried to get you today, Brother Burke, poieo, which means to do, to work. I wonder what connection that has with poimen. Is there any? I want you to find that out for me, if you will, next week. We'll mention it at that time. There are some biblical references that I want you to notice. This morning, you remember we noticed in Ezekiel, the 34th chapter, in that passage, we cited about 16 verses. Well, in the 18 or 19 verses there, they have about three more verses later, the word feed is connected with the work of the shepherd 14 times in those few verses. In about 18 verses, 14 times he refers to the feeding that should take place at the hand of the shepherds, at the hand of the elders. In 1 Peter 5:2, he tells the elders to tend the flock that's among them. But that's simply the word for feed. Feed the flock. That's your responsibility if you're an elder. And those of you who would aspire to be elders, if you don't like to teach people, that doesn't mean necessarily publicly. It doesn't mean that you have to be a Neil Pryor. Wouldn't it be tremendous if we had about 15 or 20 Neil Pryors? Great, what a blessing that would be. But we don't have 15 or 20 Neil Pryors. But you know what it does mean? It means that a man has the ability to get out at least on the one-on-one basis, and with a sufficient knowledge of the Word of God, that man can teach and can train and can exhort and edify. That's one of the requirements of an elder. In Acts 20:28, again, it says that God, through the Holy Spirit, had appointed these men and set them over the church as bishops so that they might feed the church of the living God. In 1 Timothy again, chapter 3 and verse 2, it says he must be an apt teacher, an able teacher. In Titus 1:9, there's an extensive passage there that's parallel to 1 Timothy 3. In Titus 1:9, listen to this statement, and you'll see how important it is, and you'll see why it's important that the elder be qualified to teach. Beginning in verse 9, it says, he must, that's talking about the shepherd, he must hold firm to the sure word as taught, so that he may be able to give instruction in sound doctrine and also to confute those who contradict it. For there are many insubordinate men, empty talkers, deceivers, especially the circumcision party. They must be silenced since they're upsetting whole families by teaching for base gain what they have no right to teach. And the picture here is that there were men going out into the homes of people and teaching things which they ought not to teach, and that the elders needed to be able to go in there and stop that foolishness and correct that false teaching. He said they must be stopped. And so he says the elders must be able to hold on to that sound word. They must be able to do battle. They must be able to do polemics. They must be able to stand toe to toe and nose to nose and defend the truth. That's one of the requirements of an elder. Well, now, how much must you be qualified? Well, there are some of us that are more qualified than others of us, and others of us that are less qualified than some of us. But any man that would serve as an elder or as a shepherd or as a minister of the gospel working with elders in this capacity, he must be able to use the word of God for the protection of these people who are under his care. Look at Mark 6:34. There's a beautiful passage there. In Mark 6:34, it just simply says that this uses this same expression again. You remember when Jesus... Terry told us about it the other day, when Jesus went with his disciples, got in a boat, went across the sea, and the people were so anxious, they went around the northern part of the sea, came down, and were waiting on the shore there as Jesus got out of the boat. In verse 34, he says, as he landed, he saw a great throng, and he had compassion on them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. Well, that's the first thing that a man does who's a shepherd. He wants to teach and to share and encourage and exhort and edify. That's part of what a sheep has the right to expect from his shepherd. Well, one only becomes a pastor shepherd in the true scriptural sense of the word by his desire and his ability to feed the flock and to care for their spiritual needs. I don't know of many elderships, if any, where this is the number one primary duty and recognized obligation of the eldership. That of the teaching, the training, the edifying, the exhorting. I don't know. We've been sidetracked into the many trivia and the mountains of paperwork and all the details that should not be concerning the eldership. We've gotten sidetracked there. And brethren, we've got to get back on the right track. Well, a fourth thing that a sheep has the right to expect from a shepherd, and that is self-sacrificing in the sense of protection. Look at verses 11 through 13 of John 10. There he talks about the hireling. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hireling and not a shepherd, whose own the sheep or not, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he's a hireling and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own knows me. As the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. He's talking about protection here. And he says only the hireling runs. The real shepherd stays in there and stays with those people and their problems, with those sheep. Whenever Satan is attacking a Christian, I've heard it expressed many times, well, I don't want to appear nosy. What kind of a sheep do you think would think that of a shepherd, that he was being nosy? As the lion had the sheep's head inside the lion's mouth, and he sees the shepherd over there wringing his hands saying, forgive me, I don't want to appear pushy. Is there anything that I can do? But don't think I'm being nosy now. Can you imagine a sheep that would be offended at someone coming and expressing an interest when his head's in the mouth of the lion? And that's exactly where many heads are today, right in the mouth of the lion, And the shepherd has the right to go to the sheep and say, I know something's bothering you. What is it? I'm here to serve you. And we've got to establish that relationship between the shepherd and his sheep. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. The hireling flees. And any unwillingness of men to get into the thick of the battle and get involved with people where Satan is attacking them is evidence of a hireling attitude. And it's present many times in elders and in preachers. And we must get over it. We've got to be willing to get in there and fight and not run when Satan or when the lion or the tiger comes. In conclusion, let me point you to one more passage. In John, the 21st chapter, the very last chapter, in the very last verses, let me show you where Jesus' mind was. You can get an indication as to where his heart was and his mind by reading this beautiful passage in John 21. First of all, you see him coming looking for people. He's still the great shepherd. After his resurrection, Peter and about six other men said, I'm going fishing. They said to Peter, wait, we'll go with you. So they all went down and got in the boat and were fishing and fished all night. And then you see a familiar figure. He's not familiar because of his figure, really. He's familiar because of his action. He told them to cast their net on the other side of the boat. It rang a bell with John. John said, that's the Lord. Then Simon Peter jumped in, swam ashore, and Jesus was found there to be out looking for men. He's still looking for people. Come on, he said. And so he said, come on, have breakfast. And they sat down. He fed them breakfast. And then he starts talking to Simon Peter, the first real communication that he'd had with him since his denial. And he said, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? And Simon said, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said to him, what? Feed my lambs. And a second time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep. He said to him the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. Brethren, there's nothing closer to the heart of Jesus than the care of his sheep. Feed my lambs. Tend my sheep. Feed my sheep. It looks to me like that of all the important things on earth that Jesus needed the apostles to be aware of, at least he could have shared this final instruction to Simon Peter with two or three other things scattered in there among these. Not so. When Simon Peter confessed his love for Jesus and Jesus was restoring this man to his place of usefulness, you know what it was he directed him to? Go feed my sheep. Not go out there and be the rock that I'm going to build the church on. Feed my sheep. Feed my lambs. Tend my sheep. And the last thing that it says, he said, was this. You just take care of my lambs. And they went on down the road, and Jesus left this charge with this great man. No doubt Simon remembered it because he gave himself to this work of being a shepherd. And he looked to Jesus as the chief shepherd whom he tried to imitate. May God grant us a blessing. I'm so thankful for the reception that you're giving to the study of this subject from the biblical point of view. I'm so thankful for the elders and for their response to it. I'm convinced that they are the finest group of men that I've ever known. And the response that they have given is just simply documenting that over and over again. We're on the verge of some great things. There'll be things that God will approve. And I'm so thankful that you're involved in it. I appreciate the prayer that you led, asking each one of us to grow up with an awareness of being shepherds and shepherds' wives. This is where it's at. This is the kingdom business. And that's what we want to be about. Tonight, if you're here and you're out of your calling, if you're out of your place as a sheep, if you've been rebellious or if you've just been weak and you need to come home, the great shepherd calls you. And these shepherds will serve you. And we'll minister to you as best we can. Or if you're not one of his sheep, come today in your faith, repent of your sins, and be immersed into Him for the forgiveness of your sins. You'll be one of His sheep then. And you can expect this heart of compassion from these men that are serving and from those who will be appointed. We hope that you'll take advantage of it and use it to grow up into the fullness of Christ. If you're here and you need to respond, come right now while we stand and sing.